Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today we're moving on to looking at the beginnings of Operation Barbarossa, Hitler's ill-fated and ultimately doomed invasion of the Soviet Union. In order to talk about this in a kind of meaningful way, we need to refresh our knowledge on the previous 2 years. From August 1939 to the invasion in June 1941. Seeing that a Nazi invasion of Poland was imminent, Stalin had made a deal with Hitler, considered to be the most unlikely and shocking diplomatic episode of the 20th century, in August 1939, the Nazi-Soviet Pact. The pact was, it was a non-aggression pact. There was a trade agreement to go with it, and also a secret clause which divided Poland between the Nazis and the Soviets. The reason that Stalin chose to do this was simple. Stalin had been concerned about Hitler from 1933 onwards. He had made a number of strategic errors in dividing the democratic and revolutionary left in Europe, so no united front in Germany could exist in the advent of the Nazi rise to power. The social democrats, Stalin referred to as social fascists and said these are far worse than the Nazis. It's moderate socialists that really keep capitalism going. They give mild concessions to the workers and yet allow capitalist exploitation to run amok with and give really the capitalist system a bit of a sticking plaster, all of which may well be true, but dividing them from the German communists was a terrible idea, and it was in large part contributory to Hitler's success by November 1932 and his appointment as Chancellor in January 1933. Stalin had spent the latter part of the 1930s, from 1936 onwards, decimating not only the party, but later also the army and the air force. And the command system within the Soviet armed forces was almost completely inoperable. Not only had generals and field marshals, staff-level officers, been executed and thrown into the gulags in large numbers, but also down to division and even brigade level, there had been the decimation of senior ranks. Their replacements were inexperienced, unknowing, and they had little understanding of the kind of tactics required Marshal Tukhachevsky, who was an expert in studying tank operations. His writings and ideas were studied closely by Nazi generals like von Manstein, who he had very similar ideas about tank operations to the Nazis, using armoured columns to smash through defences, smash through infantry battalions, and then plunge deep into the enemy's rear, which is essentially what German tactics were during the fall of France. Tukhachevsky is executed, and soldiers who were receptive to his ideas daren't present anything other than very standard notions of tank warfare, i.e. Distributing tanks loosely throughout the infantry battalions and making sure that there was no concentration of power. This was the mistake that the French made during the fall of France, and Stalin was determined to make the same mistake again. There were large numbers of Soviet newcomer officers during the 1930s who had essentially no initiative whatsoever. One of the great advantages that the German army had, that the Wehrmacht had, was the principle of Auftragstaktik, where initiative is delegated downwards, where divisional commanders and even brigade-level commanders know roughly what it is that they're meant to be achieving, but how they go about achieving it is their own business as long as they get the job done. When it comes to the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union, there's paralysis because this kind of initiative has been stifled, and soldiers showing initiative are targets for commissars, for the secret police to purge. So Stalin knows that he has hamstrung his own forces, but throughout the 1930s, paradoxically, he had been obsessed with the threat presented by three countries in particular: Germany, Poland, and Japan. He saw the Soviet Union as being surrounded by enemies, but these three in particular he was deeply suspicious of, and saw the potential of invasion coming from all three of them. By the late 1930s, Stalin had concluded that the British and the French lacked the resolve to do anything about Hitler, and when he realises that he's not going to be invited to the Munich conference over Czechoslovakia being a Soviet ally, Stalin begins to suspect, perhaps with some degree of justification, that the Western allies are preparing to send Hitler eastwards if need be, to appease him in the West so he'll fight in the East. And Stalin decides by August 1939 to play them at their own game, to appease him in the East so that he'll fight in the West. One of Stalin's calculations was that a war in the West, in France, would take at least 2 to 3 years, and that Hitler would become bogged down and exhausted there, along with the British and French. And at that time, a rearmed and reorganised Red Army could perhaps sweep across Western Europe. Stalin didn't take Hitler's ideas of Lebensraum particularly seriously. He didn't see that Lebensraum, racial policy in the East, or the plan to seize Western Russia and to annihilate the population there and to create living space for Aryan Germans. He thought this was perhaps an idiosyncratic quirk of Hitler's, but not a realistic policy. Similarly, he saw Nazi anti-Semitism really as one of Hitler's own particular peccadilloes, a idiosyncratic quirk again, that was not really part of the core of fascism. There was a Marxist explanation for fascism, and it was really an explanation of the crisis of capitalism. Stalin looked at the West during the 1930s, during the Great Depression, a prolonged crisis of capitalism, and the crises of capitalism that had occurred during the 1920s, and he said, well, fascism is kind of the result here. The moment that capitalism starts functioning, then it becomes under sustained threat from the working class, from the proletariat, and the political parties that they create. The response of capitalist bosses is to create this violent ideology called fascism that's primary role isn't about doing things to the Jews per se, but about knocking the working class back into line. Now, there are aspects of this in Nazism, the destruction of trade unions, for example. But the relationship between Hitler and German capitalism is a very complicated and tense one at times, and not the simple master puppet analysis that Stalin came up with. And what Stalin really fails to understand is that Hitler doesn't see things in class terms. He's not particularly interested in that. He sees things in almost exclusively racial terms. When he looks at the Soviet Union, he sees racial degeneracy that can be swept aside and an Aryan imperium can be imposed upon it. And when he thinks about overthrowing communism in the Soviet Union, it is in large part because in Hitler's eyes this is a Jewish idea, a Jewish trick that has been perpetrated on the ignorant Slavs. This is his racial thinking. And that the destruction of the communist regime in Moscow would be the destruction of world communism and a significant blow against world Jewry. And this needs to be done to protect Europe, protect Germany particularly, but Hitler begin, the Nazis begin to see themselves as the vanguard of protecting European culture itself. So, no wonder, based on these assumptions, that Stalin thought, well, they can be bought off the German capitalists. We can supply them with large amounts of things like manganese and iron ore to make steel with for the German war machine, which can be waged, the wars can be waged in the West. And also, what do capitalists like more than free stuff that they can then go on and sell, or at least extremely cheap stuff? And the ability to extract raw materials from the Soviet Union in the trade deals created alongside the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact or the Nazi-Soviet Pact. These trade deals were a way of transporting a large amount of a surplus value to Nazi Germany. If Stalin continued with this, he thought, there would be no need for German capitalism to invade the Soviet Union with their fascist attack dogs. Instead, they would simply enjoy all the wealth being extracted from the Soviet Union until Stalin was able to recover much of his military strength. And then at that point, perhaps the deal would be revised. For Hitler, the fall of France, which had been an epic success, perhaps his only truly great military success, allowed the myth that he created for himself about his own abilities to become deeply established in his own thought. Barbarossa is in part the product of this success, but also in part the product of Hitler's observations about the Soviet Union, Soviet failures against Finland in the winter of 1939-40, gave Hitler reason to believe that, as he put it, the door was ready to be kicked in, that the entire Soviet system was about to collapse. If the lightly armed and numerically inferior Finns could teach the Red Army a lesson in the snows of the Finnish border.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Then pretty much the might of the Wehrmacht would sweep Stalin and his regime away. As we know, it was a staggering miscalculation and one with implications really for the rest of the 20th century. It was the pivotal moment of the war, and in almost every statistical measure you care to look at, the Nazis were defeated in the Soviet Union. Had Winston Churchill declared an armistice or sued for peace in 1940, Hitler would still have been defeated in the Soviet Union. Had America never entered the Second World War, had D-Day not happened, Hitler would still, had he chosen to do so, be defeated in the Soviet Union. And no doubt the Red Army would have come to a rest at the English Channel. The numbers of the percentages of German soldiers killed in the Second World War, overwhelmingly, the vast majority of them die on Soviet territory, on Soviet soil. The numbers of divisions deployed on either side during Operation Barbarossa make anything that happened in the West, in North Africa, or even in Normandy pretty much a sideshow. The invasion of the Soviet Union obviously doesn't begin at the border of Soviet territory. It begins at the Soviet and Nazi border, artificial border created in Poland along the Bug River. The invasion began at 3:15 Germany time, Berlin time, on the 22nd of June 1941, when Russian border guards who had relatively cordial relations with their German counterparts were summoned to discuss important issues. Normally, the Germans and the Soviets would meet up to discuss the local Polish community and what threats it presented in terms of dissent and that kind of thing. So they went across the bridge and were gunned down by the Germans as they came close. The charges that were laid on bridges across the River Bug were removed by German engineers. They'd been put there, obviously, by the Soviets to blow the bridges just in case. And special forces had been parachuted over the Soviet side in the previous couple of days. The invasion plans were well known by the British, and they were also known by Soviet agents in Germany and Soviet agents in Japan, and a mountain of information had been fed back to Stalin already. This information was alarming, was troubling, but he was also able to dismiss it. He was angry and critical of intelligence reports, suggesting that the agents weren't doing their jobs properly, that they were listening to fairy stories, they didn't know what they were talking about. One of the key problems in the gathering of intelligence was that Stalin not only was the commissioner of spying missions, he said essentially to Beria and people below him what he wanted Soviet agents to go and find out, but when the intelligence came back, he was the ultimate arbiter of its validity. This, whilst I'm not au fait with intelligence work, is, as I understand it, one of the great fallacies of intelligence gathering. Never be the commissioner as well as the analyst, because you always see the biases that you're looking for in the first place. On that day, on the 22nd of June, some 3.6 million Axis troops, German, Hungarian, Romanian, Italian, began to advance in a line from the Baltic to the Black Sea, devastating the Soviet defences. The Soviets were expecting war to come to them at a certain point, but they were dramatically thrown off guard and taken by surprise by the invasion itself, and also the fact that Soviet defences seemed to be absolutely paralysed. A generation of young German men had grown up not only with the propaganda of Nazism and the belief that the Soviet Union represented the home of Jewish Bolshevism, but also with a deeper and more long-standing and more traditional German view that the bulwark against Russian barbarism was Germanic civilization, and that Germany needed to invade the East in order to preserve and push back this barbaric horde, which was really, in their eyes, an Asian horde beyond the Ural Mountains, and that everything from the Baltic to the Urals and from the Arctic down to the Black Sea was meant to be kind of terra nullis, a land where nobody was there. Hitler, in his rather naive writings in Mein Kampf, would frequently talk about the Great Plains of America or the British Empire and its colonization of India and Africa and Australia as examples of where other European powers had kind of got it right, and that the Americas would be the template for how Hitler would respond in Russia. In the Deluge by Adam Tooze, a book that I frequently cite, there is some interesting views on how during the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk that the German generals and politicians of the Kaiserreich viewed places such as the Ukraine and Western Russia, and they knew that America now in the war had the land, the territory, the population and the productive power to really wipe any European power off the map. And they looked to Russia as being the counterweight to this. Adam Tooze's argument is it is the rise of America as a world power that it has a fundamentally distorting effect on the rest of 20th century history, and that part of German colonial ambitions in the East is a response to the introduction of this vast, productive new continent into world affairs on the opposite side of things. Hitler looked at the stalemate in the West, the intransigence and stubbornness of Britain in its refusal to surrender, and Hitler guessed that Churchill was waiting for a war in the East, and waiting for a war between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. One of Hitler's main goals with Barbarossa, as well as Lebensraum, was to be able to destroy the Soviet Union and demonstrate to the British that there really was no hope in continuing, that when the Soviet Union fell, it would give the Nazi regime a vast amount of new resources and potentially even manpower that could be employed in the West, and that there would be a guaranteed failure as far as British resistance went. And of course, in all of this, there is racial thinking at its core. Max Hastings, in All Hell Let Loose, writes of 18-year-old Henry Mettelmann, Hamburg locksmith turned tank driver, who wrote, "I accept it as natural that it was a German duty for the good of humanity to impose our way of life on lower races and nations who, probably because of their limited intelligence, would not quite understand what we were on about." The idea that Germany might be defeated was barely in the thoughts of the general staff or the officer corps or the vast majority of Hitler's armies, the rank and file soldiers from private soldiers upwards. The idea that Russia was too big, that it had been the downfall of Napoleon, again, was not something that was properly entertained. It didn't seem possible following Hitler's stunning victories in the West, from Norway all the way down to Greece, and the advances that the German army had made in North Africa. But the reality, of course, is that this vast empire that Hitler had created from, as I said, Norway, from the Arctic all the way down to the approaches to Egypt, from France in the west to Poland and Yugoslavia in the east, was, if anything, likely to be a victim of its own success. By mid-1942, for example, when Barbarossa is in full swing, supply lines to Rommel's armies in North Africa are becoming untenable. The decision to invade the Soviet Union in the height of summer presents not only the problems with dust and impassable roads that the German armour have to deal with, but also it means that unless the campaign is won fairly quickly, autumn rains that turn most of the country into a quagmire, and then obviously the problems of the Russian winter become very, very serious obstacles to victory. And it would be at that point, when the realities of Barbarossa set in, that Nazism would undergo its greatest and most fatal test. The Wehrmacht was an incredibly skilled fighting machine, but it was supplied by a flawed and ideologically undermined logistical infrastructure in Germany, which we'll examine soon. So much so that winter greatcoats and winter boots and antifreeze for tank engines is in short supply. What Hitler achieved was a lightning invasion by surprise, but one which was ultimately unsustainable. And in the next few podcasts that we're going to do on Barbarossa, because it's going to consume a lot of our thoughts, we'll examine that one in greater depth. Anyway, I hope you found this useful, and I'll be adding some more things on Barbarossa this week. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening to the Explaining History podcast. Oh, and by the way, do check out our Facebook page. I'm conducting kind of a grand survey there of listeners, and I want to hear what you have to say about what stuff I've got planned for 2018. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save big.